Hello and welcome to the Airport Experience News Podcast. Now that you've found us, please, please, please make sure to hit the like or subscribe button so you always get our latest episodes once we post them. Additionally, you can browse our growing library of content that continues to grow each month. And guess what? It's free. Yes, free. And everyone loves free. All you need to do is subscribe. It's really that easy. Find the Airport Experience News Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or Stitcher. Welcome to episode 19. I'm Ramon Lowe, the publisher of Airport Experience News and the host of this pod. So this is the first of 9 episodes that we recorded at the Airport Experience Conference, which took place at the end of February last month or so in Las Vegas. Thank you very much to Las Vegas McCarran for being a wonderful partner and sponsor of the show. It went fabulously, as you might expect from an Airport Experience event. Anyway, it was super exciting to actually record live and in person with my guests. I loved it. And to make it even more exciting, we had an actual studio, which was sponsored by Taste on the Fly. That was built and it was situated in the Experience Hall, so it made things feel really, really legit. You can hear people in the background talking, moving out to the hall. You can definitely hear the energy coming through. Speaking of which, my first guest is the co-founder of Taste on the Fly, Michael Levine. And if you know Michael, he's very energetic and he's very passionate about what he and his team do. And as you listen, it definitely shines through in the interview. Anyway, here is my conversation with Michael Levine. This is the Airport Experience News Podcast. We're recording live at the Airport Experience Conference in the Airport Experience Hall in the Airport Experience News Podcast Studio, powered by Taste on the Fly. I am actually here with someone who I've been trying to talk to for the longest time. This is Michael Levine, the CEO and founder.
Co-founder of
Taste on the
Fly. Gotta give credit to my partners.
Perfect. So I'm here with Michael Levine, the CEO and co-founder of Taste on the Fly. Michael, thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
I love it. By the way, folks, we're in this little, 8x10 cabinet here in the middle of the Airport Experience. And I'm going to tell you, this is not the experience. It's out on the floor. You got a great conference this year, by the way, Ramon.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you so
really,
much.
Really, it's fun to walk around and see everybody interacting, which I think part of the size of the hall makes that. So really, congratulations to you on
thank
that
you.
Point.
Thank you so much. So, for those who don't know, maybe the 5% who might know who not know who you are, you know, give a big brief background on your start prior to airports, and then what got you into airports.
Sure. Well, how far back do we want to go? I'm like a lot older than you. I'm like older than airports, aren't I?
I will let you take a point in time.
That's fair.
After Orville and Wilbur.
Thank you. So I had a company that did fairs and festivals and sporting events, and one thing that we did was we did food festivals, and we created the first kind of cool food festival in San Francisco, and we also did specialty events, and I became friends with someone who was involved with Ronald McDonald House Charities. We were asked to do an event for them, and we did a very fun gospel fest, and that person then about a year later said to me, hey, I'm going to put some restaurants in San Francisco Airport because they're not looking for a master concessionaire, which I didn't even know what that meant. We're looking for locals. And he said, great. And I said, well, good luck to you. And he goes, hey, just wanted to let you know that I'm kind of doing that. And I said, well, that sounds fun and all that. And about 2 weeks later, he came back and said he went to a conference that was held with Bob Freeman of Marketplace in Florida. And that he came back discouraged, and I said, what's the matter? He goes, oh, they don't want franchises. They want, like, what you do. I said, what do you mean? He goes, they want real restaurants to come into this airport. So I said, well, I can help you with that. So I did. So I introduced him to a few restaurateurs who I knew who were willing to come out in the park for a weekend. I figured if they were willing to do that, they'd do an airport. And it didn't quite work out the way we thought, but I said I'd help do it, and we ended up opening in San Francisco the two first Cafe Del Mondo's, which were done with Il Fornaio, which has Italian restaurants throughout the country. There's Venetian, which is right here in this hotel, is an Il Fornaio restaurant. And there's one in New York. And it was challenging, but we realized there was a bit of a niche. And the niche was, is if you delivered something exciting and real, and we had, their bakery was 6 minutes away, so we had fresh breads delivered every day. So I said, well, I'm interested. Let me help you guys out in this. And That was our year one. It was in 19, we opened in 2000 in year one. We were graced to win a bunch of awards because it was a different concept. We then grew the company today into soon to be 5 airports. We just won 2 locations in Vancouver, and we are currently 26 locations in 4 major airports. Our first year we did $1.2 million. Last year we did $125 million. And it's slow growth compared to some other folks in this industry, but it's a very controlled and very successful growth.
Very deliberate growth.
Totally deliberate, as many people in the news said, well, Michael, no wonder you have such a high average unit volume. You cherry pick everything. I go, I think that's the right idea, right?
That's the perfect thing. I mean, would everyone want volume? Would everyone want to be in like a 50 airports or like 100 airports at a time? Very deliberate.
That's an interesting question because we've looked at that, and we look at that particularly since about a year and a half ago, most people know it, a private equity firm became a major investor with us, and they have a particular goal, and their goal is usually growth. And for us, it's still got to be the right growth, because if we change the core direction of our company, then we're not the company we are. And even if you say, well, it doesn't matter because you're going to grow and become something else, I don't think you totally morph into something else if what you did has been successful. If it's not successful, then I think you want to disrupt. But if you're successful, I think you want to continue to build on it and then find innovative and new ways of expanding that. And that's what we've learned to do and try to do. To be fair, and most people know this, I mean, we at one point had an 86% win rate in RFPs. Everybody was like, well, we didn't bid on every RFP. Last year we dropped to a 50%, right? Well, okay, because we bid on more than I bid on, and so that's part of the change.
Sure.
And it's part of understanding it that you have to do that. It also means for us that we're now competing different than we used to. We look at it differently and we choose and select differently of what we're now doing. At the same time, the focus still is that we have to be able to be hands-on. So if we can't be involved in hands-on with the brands we bring in who entrust their reputation. I mean, they trust their experience, right, directly. And knock on wood, we've been super successful in that. We have exclusives with brands that say we wouldn't go with anybody else. And we're not perfect. I mean, we know when we make mistakes and we get Yelps and we say, oh my God. And the first thing I think of, if I'm the owner of this brand and I read that Yelp, I'm gonna be like, it doesn't matter how much exposure and how much money Taste on the Fly gave me, you just tainted my brand. So that is foremost to us. And we believe that's driven by how we treat employees.
Sure.
It's like, they're the people that are out there face to face. We clearly care about guest service. We understand that. We use the word guest. We don't think of them as passengers or travelers because we all came from street restaurants or interface with hospitality. So for us, that's a key guiding factor. And I believe it's helped make us successful in who we are today and what our company stands for.
So now we fast forward, you said you've been bidding on many units, et cetera. You know, so from the viewpoint of a small operator, you know, what is it like to go, what was it like initially when you're going up against some of these larger operators, and do you still feel like there's a disproportionate advantage to some of the larger companies? Do you think the playing field's becoming more level? You know, how is it from the Taste of the Fly perspective?
So I kind of look at it differently. I mean, I used to think, we were clearly small, okay? So now if you're over 100 million, I mean, even, funny, we used to have categories here at ARN of small and large, right? And we kind of blended over.
Yeah.
So I still think we're either a little big or we're bigger or smaller, right?
Yeah.
So I say we're in that kind of interesting space. But when we used to go up against mega players, right? And I don't have to name them, we all know who they are.
Exactly.
We recognized that there was an advantage that they had, right? They could spend more money, they could do more stuff, they had more context, they had more influence.
Resources.
But not just resources, they had the whole wealth behind them of saying, here's what we do all over, so trust us, right? And we realized we had to work harder, much harder, to be able to do that. But our belief was that we could always deliver on saying, what you see today and what we're presenting to you, you can go experience in any one of our restaurants. I mean, don't just believe our RFP or what we're telling you. Unannounced, you go be the secret shopper committee. you go be the secret shopper and you tell us what you get in our restaurant. And if we're not there and if it's not true, then we're not the company we say we are.
Sure.
And I believe that's exactly what we still do today, where we've gone from over 100 million and we're, you know, going to add another, what, 5 units this year in 2 different airports. I don't think it's a level playing field. I certainly think the big players have advantage. Some people would look at us as being a modestly big company because we have somewhat unlimited funds now with a private equity firm. But I don't think it's just about money. If it was always just about money, there would only be 2 or 3 players, right? That's everybody, right? But if it was only about money, every company that had money would still be around, right? They wouldn't go bankrupt.
Yeah.
So it's more than that. It's about how you apply it and what you do with it. And I think we have we're nimbler than the big companies. That's still what it comes down to. We're nimbler.
That was my next question about that. You know, how do you position Taste of the Fly? Because I do think some of the smaller companies, you know, small, nimble, agile, et cetera, come to mind. I'm glad that you mentioned the word nimble, right? Would you agree? What are some of the traits of Tasting the Fly?
Well, one, and this is what I hear back from the chefs, the brands that we work with, I think we're able to give the true love back that a brand believes that it deserves. And that is more than just lip service. That's more than just saying, okay, we're going to represent your brand and we got the right colors and the right tile and the right logo. It's how does it work day to day, you know, and continually. And look, there's challenges in it. I mean, we've never been afraid to go back to a chef, whether it's Tyler Florence, right? Or, I mean, you know, I'm doing a restaurant in the friggin' Aerosarian, you know, flyaway terminal, TWA, that Howard Hughes built, right? And it took us a year and a half before I could convince all of my partners that we needed to do this, right? I go, this is going to be amazing. And we're doing it with Jean-Georges Vingegaard, right?
Nice.
And I went into that saying, this is going to be a killer, right? This is going to be like everything needs to be done this way, right? But the reality was is that he and his team trusted that we could translate to an airport without losing the essence and the quality and the experience that's made him multiple time, you know, Michelin starred restaurateur.
But what made him comfortable with that?
What made him comfortable is the fact that not just our passion that we still care and do that, but that we understood what it was, and it's not just about, you know, here's my name, you paid me money, you're gonna do this, I'm gonna get this, but more about what is it that translates and takes your brand so that a guest will say, oh my God, this is a true Jean-Georges restaurant. This is a true, you know, Mod Market, right? The founders of Mod Market that have now merged with Lemonade.
Yep.
So the idea is that I would believe, And we all do the same, Ramon. I mean, you and I go into restaurants anywhere, but in airports or travel, and you go, okay, this feels like what my experience was when I was there on the street, or no, it's somewhat off, right? And some of it's intangible. Some of it, you just get it, right?
Yeah.
And I really think that it's all about how you recognize what the key factors are for the guest experience. For some people, it's like, this is the best steak at Bobby Vann's. I mean, there's 7 Bobby Vann's in New York, right?
Yeah.
You know, each one has a different chef. They don't even have a recipe book at any one of them, right? I mean, they all get some latitude. But every steak that is done there is exactly done on a broiler the same way.
Yeah.
You might have the cream spinach a little different, right? But is it still good? But if that steak is wrong, they know it. They'll tell you right away. This is not my steak I had at Bobby Vann's. So if you can work with a brand and a chef so that they understand that you understand to translate that essential experience, that's what the key is. And I believe that anybody who's in the industry, right, we know it. We feel the difference. So when you're dealing with experienced brands, right, they get it. And they will tell you that, you know. I mean, I don't, you know that. I mean, they'll tell you, these are great operators. These are okay operators. I mean, yeah, they're doing volume for me, but I'm a little concerned here, right? Versus saying, I trust them, right? Because they realize what is important to me. I mean, we send our chefs and our staff to every restaurant where there's a brand. Other than the proprietary brand, they need to go and not just come and train you. Don't just bring your staff out and train. Our staff needs to say, yes, I was at that restaurant. I get it. I feel it. I think again, you're able to do that as a smaller company. I mean, in fairness, this is probably
layers.
A question.
I don't know, fewer layers.
Fewer layers.
Right?
Fewer layers.
Directly, I don't
well,
you're here, and then
you
I'm
know,
like,
your look-alike duo, Mr. Wee Pham, the Phamster,
well,
right?
Thank you for bringing that up
who's
on
been,
the podcast.
Who's been all through this industry from W.H. Smith, right, to work with major companies, who I've been a very good friend with for years, and we partnered on things together, and now is our, is our development, consultant, right, and has been at DB with us at certain airports. Yep. I now hear we telling people when they go, well, what's the difference? Well, I mean, what's the difference, right? I'm sitting at a restaurant, I come in, and we is telling about why Taste on the Fly should work with this chef in Denver, wherever, and he goes, see that guy across the table? He goes, that's Michael Levine, he's the CEO. You're gonna see him here. It's not like he's gonna go away and you're never gonna see him again. He goes, I'm the development guy.
Every step.
I'm the development guy, but you're gonna see him here, okay? And that's what we do. And I don't think we could do it any other way. So, we're now in Vancouver, it's international, yeah. We've been asked to do stuff around. I always look and say, how do we impact that? How can we do that? I mean, we have brands that are our own that we could license, but I'm like, would we be comfortable doing that? I mean, I'm like, yeah. As you said earlier, how big do we need to get, versus doing what we do and having a big impact? That's different.
So my next question is, aside from the issue of the David versus Goliath, it's large versus small, what are some of the challenges that Taste on the Fly is facing than something that might be maybe particularly just the small operators?
You mean that we would have to compare with small operators or what?
Yeah, just you in general. Like, what are some other challenges out there that are, driving growth or maybe impacting your business?
So I think, I was just talking to friends around the conference before I came in to see you, and, the biggest challenge for almost everybody is the whole labor model and labor pool. It is so difficult today, and it's not just in metropolitan cities, right? It's just very difficult. And everybody wants to have the best possible labor and the best rates, and the cost of labor has escalated, so you start looking at it. It is no coincidence that you have 2 to 3 robotic concepts here today, right? Seriously, And so that is a major challenge, right? And as I said earlier, we are in a people business, and the people is your people that work for you first. Because if they're not fulfilled and happy and seeing growth and support, how are they going to share that with the guest? And oftentimes the guests that we see, we only get that guest for a few minutes. At a QSR, you're like 3 minutes throughput, and how do you make an impact? Or an hour if they're sitting down, and you hope that if they become a repeat customer because they fly out and they go through your terminal, but if they don't, we used to talk about, look out for word of mouth. Forget word of mouth, right? It's like two buttons, two pushes on Yelp, Instagram, Twitter. It's like, terrible, I'm never going there again, right? And it's done. So in reality, I think the challenge is, for us, the biggest challenge is, how do you work through the labor model? And I honestly think airports could assist with that. I think there's ways they could dedicate. They could make it easier for staff to get through security instead of them having to stand in line in places. Some airports don't have employee entrances. I think they could make it easier by closer parking. I think they could make it simpler by lower rates, so you could get people who would work and be of a better caliber than we used to have, right? When we were a concession-only business. We're not a concession-only business anymore. Look around. Look at the number of star chefs that are now being represented by concessionaires, okay?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yourself. Yeah, that's true.
That I think is one of the challenges that people see, is how do you make that work in airport? The rising cost of building is, it's almost insurmountable today.
But it's almost manageable, though, as opposed to,
I don't think it's manageable, but it's hard to say. If I was an airport, if I was a property manager, and you came to me and said, oh my God, it's too busy, and said, well, why did you bid on the RFP then, right? And if you don't want to be here, then don't be here.
No.
So does it compromise your build-out costs and everything? It does, but that needs to be traded with plus over street. That needs to be traded with the length of the leases. I mean, longer leases make it easier for folks to put that money in and justify it as such, right? And it also, I think, is important that you build durably. Nothing is harder than airport, you know, travelers with luggage and ourselves, even ourselves in airports. So,
no, that's great. That's great. And my last question for you is, like, what's next? You know, what's next for you other than, like, healing from your current injury?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I am healing while I'm sitting here, right? I am healing from it. Thank you. What's next for us? Oh, we're actually looking at, since we've now done Canada, which has always been a desire and dream of ours to do that, and there's new airports coming up in that, we're looking at maybe partnerships in South America. I was down in Lima last year. I've been in Argentina earlier this year. And we're looking at whether we would go because we've been invited to do stuff, or whether we'd partner with operators there that I've met through these kind of conferences, and we have similar ideas. And well, so I think that's part of the dance for us, is to do that. People have said to us, why don't you do the reverse of what the guys in retail would do? Why don't you go into retail? I go, I know what our skill set is. I know what we do well, you know? And I don't want to pretend that we can do that, just even if there's money in it, right? We already have part of retail. Napa Farms Market, yep. Berkshire Farms, we have retail, but it's curated retail, and it relates to food. So next for us is to see how do we layer upon top of what we've already done successfully.
And it's exciting, I'm sure, for you. You're looking forward.
Do I seem excited? I'm usually excited, right? You're modestly excited, aren't I, right? Okay.
Yeah, you've toned down for the podcast.
Thank you.
You are a very excitable guy.
Thank you.
And that's what I love about you.
Appreciate that. Thank you,
awesome.
Ramon.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to speak.
It was fun. Can I go out of our little cubicle now and go back to the world?
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.